Accession number 30655, Mr. Clive Sutton, Real 5. Now, anything else happened while you were with 8th Training Battalion, Remy at Taunton? You were there from January till, roughly speaking, June. Now, anything else happened in that time?
No, it was a very well-run camp, and the commanding officer was really good, but you couldn't do drill for toughness. And we had a very kind of strict company sergeant major who thought he ran there was four companies, and he took the whole of the parade ground to such an extent that, I mean, this is a matter of courtesy, one of the other companies marched their company between our body of men and the sergeant major just to teach him a lesson, you know, which is a silly little thing. But within army kind of things, it shows what can happen. No, I tried to, I don't know if I've said this, but I did try to do a parachute course. Did we say this?
No.
A few of us applied for a parachute course, which is a 6-week course, and you've got your wings, you do 2 weeks jumping at the end of it. And he threw us out. He said he had his wings, and he said it took him 18 months, and nobody was going to, from his company, was going to do it in 6 weeks. And somebody I knew did it afterwards. I was talking to him, and he said it's not a good thing to do anyway, because you get called to do 8 jumps a year at very short notice. Anyway, and he says it can be a big...
What made you want to do it?
One did in those days. You know, we're a military age, you know. I mean, the war had finished, and we thought it was a natural thing to do. Anyway, I came home, back home for a couple of weeks embarkation leave. And and we got our postings from there. And
that was in June, was it?
Yeah. And I told my father, he picked me up from the station, and he said, where are you going then? I said, I'm going to Korea, not being very pleased about it. He said, that would be really great, because I really wanted to go to Kenya anyway, because there was trouble going on there. Anyway, so I went back to camp. We went back to Arborfield, a transit camp. Now, I couldn't tell you the name of it. I think it's Popperingi Barracks. And they got us working where they could, but we skived off when we could, unless the work was interesting. And they didn't care. The library would be filled up, about 200 people, you know, sitting on the floor and everywhere.
And how long were you there for?
I think it was 2 weeks there, waiting.
In June?
Yeah. Well, June to July, because we went from there to Southampton, and we embarked on the, made a note of it, on the Orwell, Empire Orwell. Beautiful ship, you know. We got off the train, and there was this massive white ship, towering over us. And we had to go on board the ship by the gangway, carrying all our equipment, all our webbing, kit bag across our shoulders, a small kit bag in our hand, a sea kit bag, rifle over at the other shoulder, and nothing to hold on to, and you have to jiggle your way out. And this is a couple of thousand troops doing this. I don't think anybody tipped it into the water. It was difficult. Anyway, they gave us a fantastic send-off from Southampton.
In what way? Tell us about it.
Well, as we went off, I mean, a lot of people with their parents had come, but as we went down the river, ships sounded their sirens, and trains on the side all beeped, you know, and they recognised us going out, because we were all up on everywhere. And so it was a great send-off. And to me, I'd been evacuated during the war, so I wasn't one to suffer from homesickness or anything, you know. I was okay, and I was really looking forward to it. I'd never been abroad before, and I'd grown up on adventure yarns and, you know, the Empire and things like this. So I was really kind of just right for this. Anyway, and we didn't feel a motion on the ship. motion on the ship until we got to even across the Biscay, about 2 or 3 days, and then there was a slight swell and the boat started to move. But we were on a deck above the sea level, so we could look out the portholes, and it was nice. I can remember, this is a very vivid memory for me. As I said, I'd never been abroad, but wanted to. And as we went round into jib into the Mediterranean, a Spanish fishing boat came along, and they were actually wearing bandanas and, you know, and all brown, and they looked Technicolor, straight out of a storybook, you know. And I really felt, oh, this is the life, you know.
Now, what about conditions? What was your mess deck like, or you know, where you were sleeping?
The sleeping, well, we were on 3-tier bunks, which were fine. I was on the top level. When we got a bit farther, it got very hot, really hot. So that we went up on deck.
Was it crowded down there?
Yeah. Well, it was crowded, but it's not more than we expected. We had a locker, small locker, and quite strict discipline on board. We all had given jobs to do.
Hang on. And what was the food like on board?
I can't remember it being bad. I would imagine it was quite good.
You know. Now, tell me about the jobs you got.
Well, mine was very stressful. I had a porthole. That was my job, and it was made of bronze, and it was all green and nasty. And my job was to polish it. So once I'd got it polished up, which took me a couple of 2 or 3 days, this is only before morning inspection. And once I got it up, I could clean it in about 5 minutes. So it was that was the sole amount of work I think I had to do there. I'm not sure. We did guards on the way back, but I don't remember going on the way out.
I should have asked, were you seasick at all?
Yes, I was seasick. You get a lot of laying around, not doing a lot. And I was laying on my bunk reading a book. And I jumped up in the middle of the afternoon, went up on deck, you know, just to kind of make a change. And suddenly, it wasn't rough or anything, it was just a little bit of motion. I do suffer from seasickness, by the way. And suddenly, I was feeling seasick. And I was hanging out, and I said to a friend of mine, oh, go down and get me a pill. And by the time he came up, I'd been seasick. And everybody around me, they killed themselves. They laughed so much because it wasn't a bad day by any means. When we came out of Hong Kong, it was rough. A typhoon was in the area, quite close to.
Hang on, that's a bit later. So, okay. So you got how long before you got over you from your seasickness?
No time. You know, I was sick, and then, you know, queasy for a few minutes, and then I was okay.
So it wasn't sort of repetitive.
No. But I on boats I do get seasick fairly quickly. So, and yet I've done a lot of sailing, and sailing doesn't affect me. I don't know quite why.
Now what happened? You got to jib. You said you saw this sort of great scene, yeah. This boat and sailors. Now what happened then? What do you remember of your journey out there?
The captain was really first class, because anything came up, there would be posters up that's happening in the area, or else, like as he went up to the North African coast, right to Algiers, so close, we could see it all, and they pointed out, you know, over the tunnel, over the public address, what was there, the Medina, and you could see cars going along the front. So anything like that was fine. They used to warn us about the ports coming up, because it was the classic route, you know. And we used to have lectures, weapons drill. I think we did a little bit, but it wasn't very hard, you know, it wasn't much. And so really it was a lovely journey. We spent a lot of time leaning over the side, because we saw whales. Saw a few whales actually, and things in the water, loads of flying fish, you know. So, you know, it's all.
Did you get ashore anywhere en route?
Yeah, we did. They didn't let us ashore at port side, although we did actually, we anchored there, and we had a gully man came on, you know, and there were the man boats and this, you know, all the people selling the stuff. But they didn't let us go ashore there. And then from there we went through the canal, Suez Canal. And all the troops on the side were saying, you know, get your knees brown. And we were saying, get a foreign posting, because we were, as I said, going to Korea. And, you know, it was, and I went through the Bitter Lakes, which I went back to later. And it was a very, very enjoyable, you know, journey, you know. A friend of mine, you say about work, he had to work what he called the tin room. And this is where the canteen was, or the deck, you know, food deck. And he had to go in the tin room to clean all the knives and forks and utensils and saucepans and things. And he was stripped to the waist, and every meal he got that. And he was losing, and it was absolutely like tropical in there. It was terrible. And he had a really bad time. He managed to get a kind of relief from it afterwards, and somebody else did it. And so, you know, it was very unfair in that way. But every day we had a ship's inspection, twice a day, in fact. And the captain had come through with all the senior officers, and there was a big retinue. And they're all on the lookout, and we stood by what Joel, and I had to stand by my porthole. And he'd have a good look at it to see it was clean. And so from that point of view, I always thought they kind of kept a good ship, because they didn't let anything go that wasn't, you know, kind of efficient and military, I suppose you'd call it. We had a lot of injections on board.
What effect did they have?
There was one which was the tetanus, I think, which was very painful, you know, on the arms. And that really hurt. That's the only one that I recall, but we had about four, you know, and or queuing up. You'd see the odd person coming out with blood coming down his arm, so they must have been getting the needles a bit blunt or something. But, you know, I can't, you know, it was fine.
You were going to tell me about the visit to shore. So not Portside, but where did you go ashore?
Well, we went ashore in Aden, Colombo, Hong Kong, Singapore.
And what do you remember of it?
Aden, we only went to as far as on Steamer Point. We didn't go into the actual, I think it's a crater district, you know, where the main town is, which isn't much. It's a bit of a tourist trap. And there was people selling stuff. We went into, there's a kind of a built-up area with shops and things. And we walked down there, we all did, because we had just come off the ship. We were anchored off, I seem to remember. I think we'd come ashore in lighters. And when we got to, got there, and it was so poor. It was absolutely dreadful. I've never seen anything like it. And the military police came out, And they just walked across the road, about six of them, and just like shepherded everyone away from it. So it was obviously out of bounds, but we didn't realise. But, you know, I mean, this is hundreds of troops. Anyway, Aden wasn't much good. We actually found a swimming pool in an Air Force camp, which we're allowed to use. So we went for a swim. Coming back, I didn't even bother to go ashore. But, you know, it was a place to go to, you know, I suppose, just the once. Do you want to know about the other one? Colombo was good, enjoyed that. We went, one of the local guides kind of attached himself to us and took us round to one or two places for, a few shillings. We went to temples and anything we could see like that. Something I always remember about Colombo was iced tea. I've never had iced tea like it. It was beautiful. And it was a day sightseeing, really. And although we used to carry our pay books in our top left pocket, you know, it's a kind of a semi-regulation, I suppose. And a couple of lads coming towards us, they tried to steal it. They kind of went for it. Now, I managed to knock their hand away. But, I mean, by and large, they were very friendly. There was nothing, you know. this is something I'd nearly forgotten. We met some Colombo Remi soldiers, and they were playing football in their bare feet. So, you know, we were youngsters and we played football. So they called out and said, do we want a game? So we had a good game of football with them on this green, like public green place. And for about half an hour, I suppose. And then they took us back to their camp, which was close by, and which was just like one of our own camps. They were, you know, they were just the same as us, you know. It was, so that was really quite interesting. Now that was, so it was Colombo we liked, everyone liked that. And then we went on to Singapore. It tended to be about 7 days sailing in between. Singapore was good. We went, we just had a, we saw the Raffles Hotels and, you know, usual places. And was taken around in one of these cycle shore things. And I don't know, yeah, coming back, well, I'm talking about coming back. And it was really interesting, nice. You've got to remember that we weren't used to Asian people. And we were gradually getting closer now. Of course, the war had only been over a few years. And we were going to Japan, and we, you know, kind of, we hated Japanese. Anyway, so it was, I suppose, in the back of our mind, we were, you know, maybe a bit scared of what was going to be there. Which all changed, by the way. It's amazing how quickly it changed. Then we went to Hong Kong. And I think we had a day there going, and when we came back, I think we had a day and a half. But once again, my brother-in-law Ted, he was stationed in Hong Kong now and then. You know, his ship would go in for a week or two, and he never went up to the Victoria Peak. And we were only there a day, but we went up there, and it was. And we, my company, you know, that my father's business, we used to export to Singapore and Hong Kong, Malaya, Ipoh, Penang, you know, places like that. And I actually looked up where White Way Laidlaw, which is a company we used, and saw their shop. And my dad said, you should have gone in and made yourself known, but I didn't do that. And I liked Hong Kong. Everyone liked Hong Kong. It was a really exciting place. And anyway, but on the way, we had to go back to the ship, and it was starting to get, overcast.
Well, that's what's going to be the next one, the storm. Tell me about the storm. Was it a typhoon or was it just a storm?
Well, this is as we got back.
Oh, right.
As we got back to the ship, it started to rain, and then it got torrential. We went back to the ship. Absolutely like drowned ducks, you know. And when we went out, because Hong Kong's got, I don't know if you've been, they've got a fabulous entry into the harbour. You go through islands, and it's, even as we left, it was getting rough. And they were, you know, straight out of a boys' book, they were putting wedges into the hold, what do they call it? They don't call it the hold. Anyway, out in the rain, and they were fixing it all down for the storm. And we had our evening meal, and it was even shelter of the islands, it was getting a bit rough. And we went for a game of cards afterwards, but I thought to myself, I know what I'm like. So I left it and went back to my billet, back to my bunk, which was, as I say, right on top, and it was rough. And I think at the ferry it said typhoon 30 miles, so we must have been very, very close to it. Anyway, I know there was one roll that, because I mean, do you like ships? They either roll or pitch, and when they start doing both, you know. And there was one roll that was tremendous. It just went over and over and over and over. And then it just kind of stopped and went back. And I heard somebody saying, thank Christ for that. But I wasn't sick. I don't know why. I was fine in that. I don't recall how long it lasted. I don't think it lasted very long. I think next day it was okay. And then we went in. Oh, and one of the things that they would do on board, they would warn you. They would say, Singapore beer, what was it called? Tiger beer, steer clear, you know. And things like that, you know. Anyway, then we went through. They told us where we were going, through the Straits of Sunda, going up past, getting Indonesia way, I suppose, isn't it? I'm not actually sure. And then we went into the towards Japan, and we went through, and that was that last bit of the journey was fabulous. And then we went to Kure, and we docked there and disembarked.
So would that be August by the time you got there?
9th of August we left.
All right.
9th of July we left. 9th of August we arrived. Exactly a calendar month. And
so what happened when you got there? Where were you going? Yeah, well, you were at Kure, but what were you going to do?
Well, we thought we were going to a battle school, which we were not looking forward to, because, you know, we weren't fighting troops. Although, I mean, obviously we'd done our drill and things like that, but we weren't. And then when we got there, we found that Remy don't have to do it, but engineers do, apparently. Anyway, we didn't. So they changed all our equipment, all the stuff we'd taken out. They took our rifles off us.
Were you in Kure camp then?
Yeah, I was in a transit camp there.
And what do you mean they re-equipped you? What with?
American webbing, no rifle. I can't remember what else. I don't think that's probably about it. We'd got a death blanket we had to take with us. They took that off us, I think. And we had to make a will before we left. And of course, now we're in an active service area. Although the war was over, it was still active service. And
it's a bit strange for you people of what your age then. You're not really nothing but a lad. You're 20 or so.
Yeah.
What's it like making? I mean, did you find it a bit?
Yeah,
chilly making a will.
That's exactly the word I would describe it as. We were all sitting down in the gymnasium, and they went over things they had to do. And this is your death blanket. And
what do you mean by death blanket?
Well, apparently you had that, and if you died out there for whatever reason, they buried you in it. And you had to make a will. And I mean, I probably had about 100 quid. I wasn't without money, but I didn't have a lot. And I left it to my younger brother, actually. I'll have to tell him that one day. He might. Anyway, it was chilling, you know, to hear that. And we knew that we were going into somewhere that was a little bit, you know, adventurous, I suppose. And we stayed at Kure, I don't know.
Kure, well, what were you doing there, you know, other than that?
Basically re-equipping, yeah, and getting kind of organised to go over to Korea.
How long were you there for?
4 days, I think.
So still in August then?
Yes, but it was, we went into town, and I've never seen a town like it. It was like a Wild West town.
Tell us about it. I don't know much about Kure.
Yeah, well, it is, Kure was where we had our base workshops. That's the Remy. Although that didn't affect me at that time. But it's a small town, it's very much shipbuilding, I think, and things like that. But we went out in town in the evening, and it could have been because a ship had come in, I don't know. But there was prostitutes everywhere. I mean, there was dozens of them. And there was bars, and, you know, it was just a town that was so kind of alive, you know. And, you know, we were young and we didn't, we were, you know, I've got to be careful when I say this, because I'm not one, I'm, how can I say this, I was a decent lad, you know, and you tend to, your friends are like that, but we were, you know, we were inquiring. We didn't like to, you know, we did more than the others, you know, if we could, because Hiroshima's not far away. We went there later. Anyway, so I can't remember much more than that they re-equipped us and put us on a boat, which was, there's two boats used to go back and forth, the Isang and the Wosang. The British India Steamship Company, I think, but they were rough old tubs, and there was nothing, you know, you just had a hammock, as far as I remember, nothing on it, just springs, and you just, you know, kind of slept on there as best you could. Chinese crew. And but it, you know, it was an experience. We didn't mind it, you know. Then we went to Pusan and went to a transit camp there, and we were there for not long, 2 days, 1 day, I don't know. We had enough time to go swimming, so we were probably there a couple of days. And then we went, we were going up to the north, and I was posted to the first Commonwealth Div Provo Company, military police.
So that was the name of the unit, was it? Provo Company, First
Commonwealth Division, yeah. And that was interesting.
To the MT section, I presume?
Yeah. We were what's called an attachment. And that's the lowest level in the Rimi, is where they post maybe one or two to a unit. I think, you know, that they're kind of a little bit more superior. And they you know, and they're on their own.
And where were they, the first, the military, the Provo Company?
You don't want to hear about the journey?
Well, it's just trying to find where they were.
Well, they were north Korea, actually. They were over the 38th parallel by a mile or two. And where the MGM River was, there was Pintail Bridge. I don't know if you've heard of it. And we were just short of that. You know, you could, you know, as you come out the gate, you turn right and you'll be across the bridge.
So Pintail Bridge Camp, I think that's called. So tell me about the journey there then. How did you get there?
Well, we went by train, and we're amazed how rough the train people were with the locals who were there. You know, they would bang them and hit them, and old ladies and things. Anyway, and it was a steam train, and as far as I remember, it might have had mesh in the windows, but they had no glass in the windows. So as it, you know, all the smoke would come in, you know, and it took all day. We left probably about 8 a.m, and we steamed all day up to Seoul. Got there about 5 o'clock or something. Filthy, absolutely filthy. And I always made a point of putting water in my water bottle. People didn't, because it's heavy, you know. And you know, I'd had a few sips out of it, because as far as I remember, nothing to eat on the journey. I can't remember food or drink or anything. And I had a little wash before I got there, which was just as well, because I was. And when I got there, I said to them, "Oh, they'll probably pick me up, the Provo." And when I got there, there was a jeep waiting for me, and the driver. And it was pure chance. The MT officer had gone off on R&R leave to Tokyo, and he'd left his, he said his driver, you know, got somebody coming in, pick him up and bring him to camp, which was pretty good. Otherwise, I'd have been on a lorry going round from camp to camp. So that was interesting, and the driver was a really nice chap. He came from Southend, he did, so he didn't live far away. And that was an interesting journey, because it was dark by then. I'm going through villages and there's no electric light, just flares and lamps. And he'd tell me a few stories about Korea. And so it was good. Anyway, when we got to the other end, when we got to the camp, the MT section, if you know Korea, you've got all these ranges of hills. And as the side of the hills is like ribs coming down. And the main camp was on one side of the rib, and the MT was on the other side with a yard, you know, quite a big area we could do the vehicles. And we lived over that side.